Tonight on the Worldview Weekend Hour, the Tavistock Institute, mental hygiene, cognitive dissonance, and brainwashing. The information operation being carried out on Americans. It really comes down to this, the battle for the mind. How are Christians and conservatives being backed into a corner and marginalized and set up to either conform or face the consequences? The Worldview Weekend Hour begins right now.
WVW-TV presents the Worldview Weekend Hour with Brandon House. Whether the topic is law, science, government, economics, history, family, social issues, education, or theology, Brennan brings the issues of today into clear focus through the lens of a biblical worldview. And now, here is your host, Brennan House.
Tonight on the Worldview Weekend Hour, we're going to talk about cognitive dissonance, the Tavistock Institute, mental health, psychological warfare, the battle for the mind. That's what it all comes down to, folks, the battle for the mind. It's part five in our series on information warfare and American Christians, or you could say information warfare and constitutionalists, conservatives, the Judeo-Christian worldview. This would include some of our Jewish friends that believe in the Old Testament and the values found there, dealing with the relationship between nature and man and the issue of free market and private property. All of these issues are under assault today as the Judeo-Christian worldview increasingly becomes, well, the most hated worldview of all. Why? Because it expresses belief in absolute truth. It expresses belief in the laws of nature and nature's God and in the idea of right and wrong, which means you have mental illness. As you'll see tonight, some of the leaders within this movement known as the Tavistock Institute, which is connected to the Frankfurt School, declared that if you believed in right and wrong, it was a sign of mental illness. Well, tonight's lesson is entitled, How the Deep State Neutralizes Opposition Through Psychological Warfare. How the Deep State Neutralizes Opposition Through Psychological Warfare. And my friends, I don't know how many of you are familiar with a program that started in the 1950s known as, well, Operation Mockingbird, as it was called. Operation Mockingbird. Now, folks like to make fun of it out on the World Wide Web as being some kind of conspiracy theory, but it's not. It's well documented that indeed in the 1950s, the CIA had a program where they were indeed infiltrating America's media. They were using journalists, they were using members of the media to push forth the ideas, the values, the philosophies, the public policy, the worldview that they, the CIA, wanted put out to the American people. It was a form of using the media to herd the American people into a pre-chosen, predetermined outcome or belief system. And it was known as Operation Mockingbird. Well, after the public found out about it in some congressional hearings, a lot of cries from Congress and the public, well, caused the CIA to at least declare that they were going to stop doing this under then CIA Director George H. Bush. But I would say that the program is likely continued very much so under the radar. Initially, maybe the program was designed to try to convince Americans to fight communism or fight some ideas that maybe you and I would agree with, like fighting communism and stopping the march of communism around the globe. Whatever the reason, it seems to be back. And indeed, you have strong evidence that there is a connection between the deep state of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, James Comey, James Clapper, John Brennan, all of these deep state actors and the media. I mean, all you got to do is turn on MSNBC, CNN, and you can see they're just parroting, the media are parroting the ideas of much of the players that we know to have made up what we call the deep state. So indeed, I think what we're going to find out tonight is a lot of what is happening is simply how the deep state uses the media and powerful institutions to neutralize opposition through psychological warfare. Look at this quote here. This is from John Rawlings Rees. We'll study about John Rawlings Rees tonight, but in 1940, he gave a speech before the National Council for Mental Hygiene. We'll get into all this tonight, but I want to share with you his quote because it really sets up the theme for this evening's broadcast, as well as helps us understand why it's so important that we are dealing with this topic of information warfare in American Christians. He says, similarly, we have made a useful attack upon a number of professions. The two easiest of them, naturally, are the teaching profession and the church. If we are to infiltrate the professional and social activities of other people, I think we must imitate the totalitarians and organize some kind of fifth column activity. It really wouldn't matter if no one ever heard of this council again, provided that the work was done. Let us all, therefore, very secretly be fifth columnists, end quote. Those who declare, oh, these are all conspiracy theories. Well, indeed, there are those that are conspiring as a group to secretly carry out a function or goal to deceive the American people. Isn't this what John Rawlings Rees is admitting to? They're going to do it secretly as a fifth column. Very interesting choice of words, because in our docu-movie Sabotage, we talk about the deep state, and that reality is the deep state is a fifth column. The cultural Marxists are a fifth column. The fifth column are cultural Marxists, and they have infiltrated all the powerful institutions. Now, notice that John Rawlings Rees, speaking at the National Council for Mental Hygiene in 1940, says that they found the two easiest institutions to penetrate were education and the church. Well, again, folks, this is why the series is entitled Information Warfare and American Christians. They're going after those who uphold a Judeo-Christian worldview, largely those who attend church and believe in a Christian worldview. We'll get into why it was so easy for them to infiltrate education and religion or the church a little bit later this evening. But that sets up our broadcast for tonight. These people are indeed fifth columnists, working secretly to penetrate education and media with their goal of psychological warfare, what they call mental hygiene. We'll define that as well. Well, let's start out with the Tavistock Institute. The Tavistock Institute of Medical Psychology was founded in 1920, and the Tavistock Institute was started in 1946. Well, my friends, I don't know if you have a copy of Siege yet. I hope you do. But we sent out just the week before Christmas over 1,000 copies of this, and the orders are still briskly coming in, which we're very thankful for. It's 8 hours and 22 minutes. But I have a whole segment, small segment here, or medium-sized segment, I should say, on the Tavistock Institute. Now, in my next docu-movie that I'm working on right now, Brainwashed America, I'll have a lot more to say about the Tavistock Institute, psychological warfare and brainwashing. And we're producing that and hope to have that out before the end of the summer, 2020. So my friends, if you would like to get a copy though of our last documentary, Siege, where I do deal with some of this, you can simply go to siegethemovie.com. I hope you'll encourage your family and friends to watch the 1 hour for free at siegethemovie.com, siegethemovie.com. We also have the audiobook. If some of you prefer to have the audiobook, you can simply go to our bookstore, wvwtv.com/store, wvwtv.com/store. You can actually purchase and download the entire audiobook, 8 hours and 22 minutes if you prefer to listen in the car. So we deal with the Tavistock Institute in the movie Siege. Now, it started officially in 1946. My friend Dr. Dennis Cuddy is a former Department of Education official for the Reagan administration. And here's how he writes, or what he writes about the Tavistock Institute. He says, quote, John Rawlings Rees, who would be a co-founder of the World Federation for Mental Health in 1948, was deputy director of the Tavistock at this time. He would become director in 1932. Rees developed the Tavistock method, which induces and controls stress via what Rees called psychologically controlled environments in order to make people give up firmly held beliefs under peer pressure. Dr. Cuddy continues, in 1945, Rockefeller Foundation medical director Alan Gregg was touring various institutions that had been involved in war medicine to see if any group would commit to undertake this kind of social psychiatry that had been developed by the Army during wartime. On April 11, 1933, Rockefeller Foundation President Max Mason assured trustees that in their program, as he quotes, the social sciences will concern themselves with the rationalization of social control, the control of human behavior, end quote. And isn't that what this is really all about? Behavior modification, psychological control. And they'll use what they admit? Peer pressure. They're going to use peer pressure, or what John Rawlings Rees called psychologically controlled environments. Psychologically controlled environments. And in course, part of psychologically controlled environments is using the media, using education, using religion to push forth what is the acceptable ideas or values, and thus the acceptable environment or culture. Another word for environment would be culture. What's the acceptable culture, and therefore, what are the acceptable cultural values? Dr. Cuddy continues, this led to a Rockefeller grant that resulted in the birth of the Tavistock Institution of Human Relation in London in 1947. Tavistock would join Kurt Lewin's Research Center for Group Dynamics at the University of Michigan the next year to begin publication of the international journal Human Relations. Now, this is very interesting because here's where, my friends, we can merge the Tavistock Institute with the Frankfurt School. Now, many of you know I've been writing about and speaking about the Frankfurt School for many, many years. We did our first hour on the Frankfurt School at our Worldview Weekend in Minneapolis, St. Paul in November of 1997. So we've been talking about cultural Marxism a long time. A lot of Johnny-come-latelys now are talking about it. We're glad they are. But sadly, what so many of them do is they mock us for what we talk about. They mock us all over the place. Many of them are, quote, Christian useful idiots. And they mock us for years. And then when they finally realize this is so obvious that they have to talk about it themselves, lest they look as stupid as they really are, then they start actually ripping off and plagiarizing our research. Never mind do they go back and apologize. They spent years calling us names, conspiracy theorists, and all kinds of things for saying the very same things they're now ripping off of our websites and books and videos and productions and regurgitating as their own. But that's just the reality of the world we live in, folks. But we've been talking about the Frankfurt School and cultural Marxism since at least November 1997, when we held our first Worldview Weekend full hour on that topic. Remember, we started the Worldview Weekends in February of 93. So this is something we've been doing a long time. Now look at this. This is from our docu-movie Siege, siegethemovie.com. Here's what I present in that movie. It is through Kurt Lewin, again, Kurt Lewin was connected to the Tavistock Institute, that we connect the Frankfurt School in America with the Tavistock Institute. For Lewin had worked briefly for the Frankfurt School for Social Research in Germany before he left for America, and eventually worked with the Tavistock Institute. Now, let's stop right there. For those who maybe don't remember, what is the Frankfurt School? It was a group of Marxists. They were open Marxists. They didn't shy away from calling themselves Marxist. If you go read their writings, you'll find this is the case. In fact, I deal with them extensively in my book, Grave Influence. I deal with them extensively in my book, Marxianity, at Marxianity.com. So they were Marxists, and they left Germany around 1933. Many of them being of Jewish descent, got nervous when Hitler came to power, bolted. Socialist John Dewey brought them to America, dropped them down at Brandeis, Berkeley, Princeton, where they said they were going to carry out a revolution now in America. And one of their most famous thought leaders would be Herbert Marcuse, who coined the phrase, make love, not war. We feature him with video clips in the documentary Siege. He, Herbert Marcuse, said that the old way of revolution is old-fashioned. The new way is a diffused and dispersed disintegration of the system. You must attack the existing morality of the culture. Change the culture. Change the environment. You know, this is what we're talking about here, psychological conditioning of people to change the culture or the environment through changing their values or morals. And so you can see where the Tavistock Institute and the Frankfurt School would work together very well. Not only did they have some of the same thought leaders, but as we see here, Kurt Lewin worked with the Frankfurt School and then with the Tavistock Institute. Some of their same thought leaders would be men like Sigmund Freud. Both groups highly admired Sigmund Freud, and particularly his Freudian psychology and the weaponizing of Marx and Freud together. Again, we deal with this in the documentary Siege and in the book Marxianity. So the slide continues, as we presented in Siege, that Sigmund Freud also connects the Frankfurt School and the Tavistock Institute, and that both groups greatly admired Freud and embraced Freudian psychology. Well, let's talk about cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance. You might say, well, what is cognitive dissonance? Well, Psychology Dictionary defines it as follows: a state of conflict occurring when beliefs or assumptions are contradicted by new information. Again, the short definition I found at Psychology Dictionary of cognitive dissonance is a state of conflict occurring when beliefs or assumptions are contradicted by new information. Well, what they don't tell you at Psychological Dictionary or Psychology Dictionary is that the conflict is deliberately set up. It isn't something that just happens to occur. It is a manufactured contradiction. It is manufactured chaos. Remember Saul Alinsky, Saul the Red Alinsky, who also studied the Frankfurt School, and Italian communist Antonio Gramsci. And Saul Alinsky said the change comes from the conflict. You can call it conflict. You can call it creating wedges, as we looked at last week, and how they create wedges or divide and conquer in order to carry out their revolution. You must divide and conquer. Wedges, chaos, division, whatever you want to call it. But cognitive dissonance is about creating internal conflict, external and internal. You see, the community organizer is a very busy person working with all kinds of people in various fields of influence. And they rely on the psychologist or psychiatrist and psychological warfare to create internal conflict that matches the external conflict. There's so many moving parts of their revolution. There's pressure from above and there's pressure from below. You have the politicians like Nancy Pelosi, as we're filming here and broadcasting live tonight in January 19th, 2020. Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and all the deep staters are doing what? They're being involved in lawlessness. They're thwarting the U.S. Constitution. They're thwarting the rule of law. They're making it up as they go along. And by doing that, what they're doing is they're sending a message from above, from the U.S. Capitol, to their community organizers all across America that lawlessness is acceptable, for it is your end game that is most to be treasured. So pragmatism is the principle. Pragmatism is the principle. It is okay to break the law. It's okay to be involved in violence and other things, for the end justifies the means. And so they're being lawless at their level, in the legislature, their Capitol Hill, and they're sending this lawless message to the people on the street level, their community organizers at the street level. So you have that communist pressure from above and pressure from below. But they also rely on conflict from within and conflict from without. Conflict from within and conflict from without. What they don't tell you in Psychology Dictionary is that this cognitive dissonance, as I said, isn't something that just happens to occur. It is a manufactured conflict. They want you to have the uncomfortable feeling that you are not in sync or in harmony or in unity with the prevailing culture. You see, they have worked to change the culture. They have worked to change the values of the culture over many, many years. And we know how they've done that, using the power centers of education and media, as the Frankfurt School said they would do. Go after the power centers of education and media, knowing that the cultural stream can be greatly influenced by education and media. They use those two powerful institutions. We also know they've now added religion. As we know, the communists, the cultural Marxists, have been very hostile to religion, but at some point they decided it was better to co-opt it and to push a spirituality, not traditional biblical religion, not the traditional religion of your fathers and grandfathers or that of the future patriots of or past patriots of America, but a new religion that really is more described as a spirituality, for it cannot be called religion in that what they push and have hijacked is not based on absolute truth. Therefore, it has no doctrine or set teaching or standard, and thus it is more of a spirituality. So they use education and media, now they're using religion. And what they want you to believe through this manufactured conflict or chaos is to have an internal conflict that says, what I believe is now conflicting with what is going on outside of me. In other words, they want you to feel guilty. They want you to feel ashamed, They want you to feel peer pressure. They want you to conform so that you don't have the conflict anymore. So the internal conflict and the external conflict is creating dissonance. Your values of marriage, one man, one woman, your ideas of right and wrong based on the laws of nature and nature's God, the foundation of our constitutional republic, whatever your values might be, life begins at conception, stealing is wrong. You shouldn't have the power of the government being used to take from one what is not rightfully theirs to take and giving to someone else what is not rightfully theirs to receive. And so you say, I don't believe in socialism. I don't believe in redistribution of wealth. I don't believe in bigger government. I don't believe in these entitlement programs. They go against my conscience, which says, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet, coming from the laws of nature, nature's God, and the moral law. And you have these internal conflicts on these very important values, and they're conflicting internally with the external values of the culture. And that is by design, for they want you to have a dissonance, a lack of harmony, a lack of unity. They want you to be uncomfortable, to feel out of place, like you're not part of the group, so that you will conform your behavior. And by conforming your behavior, you will then change your values to match your behavior. Did you hear what I just said? That's very important. They want you to willingly, through manipulation, behavior modification, to change your behavior. And when you change your behavior and act in a certain way, you know that it is not in keeping with your internal values. And you are willing to suppress your internal values, your convictions, and to carry out certain behavior that is in direct conflict with your internal values. But if they can get you to change your behavior so that you can avoid public confrontation, they know that inner conflict that you're having because you're basically compromising your being a hypocrite because you believe one thing, but you're doing another. You know you don't agree with this, but you're doing it to avoid the public conflict. But in doing so, you're creating an internal conflict in yourself. And so eventually, after you have engaged in changing your behavior, you will change your values to match the behavior so you can get rid of the dissonance, the discord, the lack of unity. Now, have you ever heard anyone explain this to you? This is not something you're just going to turn on the radio and television and hear. And may I say, there are so many things that we cover here that we think are of such importance that we archive them and we put them in our situation room. And I just want to stop right here and tell you that if you appreciate what we're doing and you like what you're hearing, we have over 1,000 TV shows like this that dive deep, but in layman terms, explain to you what's happening. Why you feel this way, why they put pressure on you to change your behavior, why maybe even you have found yourself changing your own behavior in direct conflict with your internal values, and you know that there's some kind of disconnect, some dissonance, some lack of harmony between what you believe and what you do, or what you believe and what you say, or what you believe and what you're willing to say, or what you've chosen to not say because you don't want the external conflict. And you may find yourself saying, well, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I'm out of touch. Maybe I'm too much of a fundamentalist. Maybe I'm too divisive. Maybe I need to lighten up. Maybe I need to be a little more tolerant. Whatever they've convinced you to believe, it is deliberately done so that your behavior forces you to change your internal values so you don't have this conflict anymore. And may I say again, if you like what you're hearing, this is what the Situation Room is all about. Over 1,000 TV shows, documentaries, ebooks, audiobooks. And I'm mentioning this because without your membership at the Situation Room, folks, there is no WVW Broadcast Network. Without your tax-deductible support, and without your member of the Situation Room, there is no time for research. There is no time to do this. I must go out and run secular businesses and take the time that I spend writing and researching and producing and editing and bringing you this, and I must go do something else. So to be blunt, if you like what you're hearing and the light is going on, you're saying, this makes an awful lot of sense. I'm so glad he's doing this broadcast. This broadcast and all the others are only made possible in one of two ways. SituationRoom.net, where we archive all our programs. Since February of 2006, did you know that? Since February of 2006, we've been offering up a subscription premium subscription club. Do you know when Netflix started streaming? Netflix started their streaming service in 2007. We've been going a year before Netflix. So we've had this idea and this vision a long time, and you join at SituationRoom.net for as little as $9.99 a month, or $99 a year, or the two-year rate, or the three-year rate. SituationRoom.net is vital. Either SituationRoom.net and or your tax-deductible contributions keeps this going. But I bet you a lot of you are just saying, I can't believe what he just explained, because no one has ever explained this to me before, and I never thought of it in these terms, that they're deliberately trying to get me to change how I conduct my behavior, wanting my lack of speaking truth, my self-censoring, or my going along with the cultural stream and someone's conversation or a group conversation, and you kind of go along with it because you don't want to be the odd man out or be intolerant or perceived in a certain way. Now you understand they're deliberately wanting you to change your behavior, so you have the internal conflict. Because they realize if they can get you to change your behavior, eventually you're going to change your values to match the said behavior. It's a psychological process. So the Psychology Dictionary, again, isn't giving you the full definition when they define cognitive dissonance as a state of conflict occurring when beliefs or assumptions are contradicted by new information. Now, I go on in my documentary, Siege, to declare the theory of cognitive dissonance, in part, is that if you can convince someone to change their behavior through uncomfortable peer pressure, and the change in their behavior is rewarded with a positive outcome, then they're more likely to change their values to match their change in behavior. Isn't that what I just told you? Once you change their values and behavior, you have effectively changed their very worldview. The converse is also true. If you apply punitive consequences on the wrong behavior, then the negative outcome makes it more likely they change their values to justify their change in behavior. In other words, to get rid of the lack of harmony, to get rid of the cognitive dissonance, they will conform. Either way, mission accomplished, you set up a deliberate conflict for the purpose of a psychological program. I go in my documentary to say, the negative consequences of stress, anxiety, alienation, peer pressure, and the marginalization is used to convince the subject to change their politically incorrect values. Thus, to reconcile their compromise, they convince themselves that the behavior they once opposed is not so bad after all. And my friends, how many people are doing that today? You pick the big issue, and there are many, many people saying, well, maybe it's not so bad after all. Maybe I can accept it. Why? Well, because they want to be accepted. Someone in the family is practicing now a certain lifestyle. They're engaging in a certain behavior. They're proclaiming a certain worldview, and everybody wants to get along. Or you work in a company, and you want to get along. You don't want to be the odd man out. You don't want to be the fundamentalist or the Jesus freak or the one holding to intolerant beliefs. And so you eventually, in order to get rid of the cognitive dissonance, you convince yourself that that what you once opposed isn't so bad after all. Mission accomplished. Saul Alinsky declared, ridicule is man's most potent weapon. It's hard to counterattack ridicule. It really is. No one likes to be ridiculed, do they? And yet, this is exactly what you see the cultural Marxist using over and over. Ridicule, ridicule, ridicule. Mocking, mocking, mocking. Because they know it is one of the most powerful weapons of all time. Well, here's how I would define the various steps of cognitive dissonance. You know I love to make lists. So I made a little list here to help us understand cognitive dissonance. One, we already decided, was conflict. They set up this conflict, this internal conflict with your values and the external conflict with the values of the culture. So they set up the conflict. This creates stress. The stress eventually leads to anxiety. The anxiety eventually leads to fear. Fear that you're going to be what? Isolated, ostracized, marginalized, characterized, right? So conflict, stress, anxiety, fear, isolation. I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be all by myself. I don't want to be an island. Why would I want to do that? One well-known Bible teacher in last year on his own church platform, as I detail in Marxianity, a guy known for telling us how we need to stand for the truth, stand alone, can't compromise. Well, late in his life, this gentleman, a Bible teacher out on the West Coast, has compromised right on his own church platform, and you can watch the video in Siege the Movie, siegethemovie.com. And what did he say to a bunch of social justice warriors, i.e. Al Mohler, Lincoln Duncan, Mark Dever? I don't want to be an island. You're my friends. I don't want to be an island. I know we disagree on social justice, but I don't want to be an island. Why would I want to do that? Well, my friends, what he just had carried out on him, whether he knows it or not, was a psychological program. And he decided that he feared man's isolation, apparently, more than God. And this is how it works. And we see it happen to people all the time that we never thought would cave. Conflict, stress, anxiety, fear, isolation, and then they surrender. I'm not going to fight you. You're my friends. I don't want to be an island. Why would I want to do that? And they surrender. And what do you now have? Mission accomplished. Behavior modification. Behavior modification. This is how I would define cognitive dissonance. Taking a very complex issue, we are tonight, and breaking it down in layman terms that we can all understand. And now that we understand it in such layman terms, we can readily see it being carried out each and every day in the life of public figures, in the life of our family, our friends, our coworkers, people at our church. We see it happening, don't we? Because it is a psychological process used over and over. Let me explain it this way. Islamic psychological warfare using jihad. Islamic psychological warfare using jihad. What do they scream? Racism. You can't say those things about Islam. That's racism. Well, they couch it as Islamophobia. They don't use the term racism as often as they say it's Islamophobia. They're saying the same thing. You're a racist. But they're saying more than that you're just a racist. They're saying you're a mental racist. You're a psychologically imbalanced racist. They're saying that your religious worldview and your values have made you a religious mental freak. You're a freak. You're a religious mental freak. Islamophobia. You have an unreasonable fear or phobia about Islam. You're not mentally stable. And it comes from your religious worldview and values. Those of you that hold to a Judeo-Christian worldview, you are the enemy of Islam as you read the Quran and the Hadiths. We know what they say about the Christians and the Jews, the infidels. And they have now convinced the public with a massive campaign through the Marxists. And again, Islam would not be making the grounds that it has on a global scale without the Marxists. But the Marxists are using the Islamists as their junkyard dogs to de-Christianize the West. Again, I deal with it extensively in the docu-movie Siege at siegethemovie.com. They are using the Marxists, the globalists. They're using Islam to de-Christianize the West, to get the folks that hold to a Judeo-Christian worldview to go through a psychological program of stress and anxiety and fear till they throw up their arms and they let go and they surrender. And if you don't surrender, they then go one step further and begin to call you crazy, mentally unstable. You have an unreasonable fear of phobia, Islamophobia, an unreasonable fear or phobia of Islam, all couched again in the terms of race. Race, racism, and psychology. Weaponizing psychology and race. And so Islam does this, right? Racism, Islamophobia, they shame you and you surrender. Now, what if you don't do that? If you're not going to comply with their first process, they'll move to the second process. And what do we have? Terrorism. Terrorism equals fear, now equals surrender. And don't we hear people saying that? I think it was the president of Jordan not too long ago we have on video stating, well, if you don't like the terrorist, quit criticizing these people, quit mocking them, quit being racist, quit being involved in saying the things you're saying, and you maybe won't have so much terrorism. In other words, the terrorism of the jihadist is our fault. It's our fault, they believe. That's what they say. And so if you don't want to be afraid, then don't criticize Islam. Because if you do, you're going to have terrorism. And what do they do then with that terrorism? They create fear. Terrorism equals fear equals surrender, right? Not what the slide says? Terrorism equals fear equals surrender. Now, let's look at what the neo-Marxists are doing. The neo-Marxist psychological warfare using cognitive dissonance. The neo-Marxist psychological warfare using cognitive dissonance. They use political correctness to shame you, right? What are some examples of political correctness? White privilege, feminism, multiculturalism. Feminism is not equal rights for men and for women. It's not. Feminism is not about equal rights for women. It's about a anti-family, anti-father, anti-man. I deal with that extensively in my book, Grave Influence. You'll find all this stuff as an ebook, by the way, inside the Situation Room at situationroom.net. No need to buy my books. They're all ebooks already for you under the library tab at situationroom.net. Feminism is not about equal rights for women. It's anti-family, anti-father. Multiculturalism is not the study of multiple cultures. Nothing wrong with that. It's a denigration of the foundational Western worldview of the Judeo-Christian ethics. So we see white privilege is really nothing more than promoting the idea that if you're a capitalist or a Christian, you're a racist. These are the ideas of political correctness. We could name a lot more, but time won't allow. So political correctness is used by the cultural neo-Marxists as part of their psychological warfare using cognitive dissonance to shame you. Political correctness is used to shame you so you feel like a racist, a bigot, a xenophobia, male chauvinist, whatever, and you surrender. Now, if that doesn't work, they'll go further, and now they'll create conflict. And now they'll use the power of the law through hate speech to prosecute you. Now they use the power of the law and that conflict, whereas the terrorists use terrorism, the neo-Marxists now use the power of the government to threaten you with anti-hate speech laws and other things, so you now are afraid to say or speak certain things for fear you might be fined or imprisoned. So we go back to the slide. They also are using conflict, fear, and now surrender. Either way, whether it's the neo-Marxist or the Islamic jihadist, they're using a psychological warfare program. And you see why it is they can work together. Now, all of this cognitive dissonance, constantly contradicting ideas and values. Not only are the, I want you to understand this. Not only are the contradicting values coming from within you internally, they contradict with the now culturally accepted norms. So there's that internal and external conflict. There's also the conflict of information, where there is the deliberate implanting of contradicting information within education and religion and media. And they deliberately set things up. I'll give you an example. Tomorrow, we being January 19th, 2020, tomorrow will obviously then be January 20th, 2020. And tomorrow there is slated to be a big rally for the Second Amendment on the grounds of the state capitol in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia. And a lot of people are coming out originally this for the Second Amendment, patriotic, constitutionalist, to defend the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, because the governor, blackface governor, Northam, he's the one that was caught in blackface last year, and he couldn't they couldn't get him to resign because I guess the lieutenant governor and then the attorney general have all been caught in the same thing in their past, so I guess they threw their arms up and said, we'll keep them all. And so he got reelected. He's the same governor, by the way, that said that when a woman has a baby, we'll make the baby comfortable, and they decide whether to kill it or not outside the womb. Infanticide, legalized now in 19 states as of 2020. That same governor now, who we know apparently has no problem with killing for the sake of convenience. By the way, I show those clips in SiegeTheMovie.com. He apparently has no problem with killing for convenience. Well, I don't know about you, but if you have a governor that's willing to kill an unborn child outside the womb, that sounds pretty tyrannical to me. That might be a good reason to maintain the right to keep and bear arms per the Second Amendment, as the founding fathers were afraid of tyrannical government and politicians and lawmakers and tyrants that would steal your life and your liberty and your property. Sounds like a great time to maintain the Second Amendment between the Marxist and the Islamist, all of them who in the end will steal your life and your property and your happiness. So He's reelected as governor, and now he's putting together what he wants to put together, an 18-man team to go around and start supposedly confiscating weapons. He wants to shut down gun ranges where people can't practice, and he wants to openly stating he'd like to take the lawful guns of citizens. Now, this is why tomorrow, January 20th, 2020, they're supposed to have a big rally in defense of the Second Amendment on the Capitol grounds. He has declared a state of emergency, and he has thus declared that they cannot bring their arms onto the grounds of the Capitol. Gun Owners of America put in a court filing to try to have that stopped. I understand at this late hour, the court has upheld the governor's ruling, his state of emergency. So they're not supposed to bring weapons with them, as I understand it, tomorrow to that rally. In the meantime, we now have what seems to be and could be, I'm not saying it is for sure, but what could be provocateurs who have either, because they are not all there mentally and they've been goaded into this, or they are paid actors, provocateurs, we now see in the media what is supposed to show up there. The KKK, a bunch of racists, maybe even some communist groups. But you're seeing the media with the pictures now of the different groups that are all supposed to show up there together. Now, the problem is when these neo-Nazis and the KKK and the constitutionalists are all standing there defending the Second Amendment. What does that do? That causes most people to go, whoa, I don't want to be seen anywhere near that. I don't want to have anything to do with neo-Nazis or the KKK. And you know what? That's my reaction as well. I look at that and I say, man, if I lived in Virginia, I would not show up there. I don't want to be seen with those kind of people. I don't want my picture taken with those kind of people. I want nothing to do with those kind of people. The KKK, the neo-Nazis, I want anything to do with those kind of people. And what they have done, whether they know it or not, or encouraged it or not, is they have set up a cognitive dissonance. And what many people will do now is throw up their arms and surrender because they don't want to be put into the camp of a neo-Nazi or a KKK. And can you blame them? Now, that's a very current contradiction that is going on. But this kind of thing goes on all the time. If you speak out against white privilege, well, you must be doing so because you're a racist. If you speak out against redistribution of wealth through social programs, it must be because you are not a good Christian. If you're not for immigrants coming to America and being dropped down unvetted, it must be because you don't really love the gospel and aren't interested in welcoming the stranger or all these other Bible verses twisted. So you must be a bad Christian. So there's constantly the contradiction, so you feel ashamed. So you finally say, and you surrender. But you also have information that is put out there that is true. And it's true, it is accurate information that's put out in the media. The next thing you know, there's a contradicting piece of information that gets put out, and now you have conflicting views. And you have so many conflicting views that, listen now, have been deliberately presented by the cultural Marxists in the media that you don't know who is right, who is wrong, and you can't make heads or tails of it because they have deliberately created all of these competing ideas and worldviews to the point it's hard to understand, it's hard to keep up with, I can't fully understand it, it's become so complex, I don't have time to deal with this. I've got things I have to do. Mom might be saying, I've got to get to the grocery store. I got to get dinner made. I got to get kids to practice. I got homework to do. Dad's like, I got to get the grass cut. I got to go get the oil changed in the car. I got bills to pay. You know, I got things I got to do. I don't have time to figure this out. All I know is it's become so complex, so many competing voices and narratives. I don't know what to believe. And they quit. All by design. All by design. A psychological process created through the Tavistock Institute's study of people who would go off to war, how they would go through great fear and anxiety in war. And when they went to war with this great fear and anxiety, guess what they found? Many of them would finally just give up, surrender as a POW. We saw that with our POWs in the Korean War. The communists tried to brainwash them and tell them all these things about America that were not true. And they didn't have the information to withstand it. And so they just surrendered. Some of them literally pulled the sheets up over their head. And within 48 hours, they were dead. They'd never seen this before, our military had. They'd never seen this. They conducted a huge study by William E. Mayer, as we've looked at in past programs, that are now, by the way, all in the Situation Room. All 20 shows on Brainwashed America and our series on brainwashing, that's all rolled this week into the Situation Room for members only at situationroom.net. All the 20 hours we did on Grave Influence, all rolled into the Situation Room. A lot of the shows by Andy Woods that were out on the public for you to see in 2019, they've rolled into the Situation Room. A lot of shows by Usama Dakdok this last week, they rolled into the Situation Room at situationroom.net. But the boys that went to war in the in Korean War would pull the sheets up over their head and give up. Because the internal conflict, what they believed about America, what they believed about our country and our constitution and our way of life was being contradicted by the communists. They couldn't withstand this information, and they had such contradicting information that they literally surrendered their life by pulling the sheets up over their head and dying. They didn't have a name for it, but the military guys, the guys in the POW camps came home, they had a name for it, and they told the doctors, we have a name for it, give up itis. They just gave up. They surrendered. You see, contradicting information. They couldn't fight off the psychological warfare program. And some gave up so much, they died. Others gave up that when the war was over, they wanted to stay with their communist captors. Others came home, broken men, believing that all that had been sacrificed by them and some by the fullest price paid, the full devotion of measure by their colleagues, was not worth it. They had been fighting for a country that didn't care for them. They were fighting for an evil, capitalistic country. They had believed the brainwashing. And they had gotten to the point where they had been so brainwashed, they didn't even trust their own fellow POWs. They would not talk to each other because they weren't sure they weren't talking to someone who wasn't a snitch or a rat. Once out of the POW camps, and they would sit in the hospitals stateside, the doctors would be shocked because they would walk up and down the corridors of the hospital, and these men who had spent months and sometimes years in prisoner of war camps together, American soldiers now free, would sit in the room with each other in a room for hours and not have any conversation. Why? Because they had been so conditioned not to trust their fellow American. The long-term lasting impact of psychological warfare. Well, what they learned is if they put enough stress and fear and anxiety on someone, they can get them to throw up their arms and surrender, to give up. And with all the competing information and competing narratives and propaganda, truth and error mixed, lie and truth mixed, people today say, I don't understand it. It's too much. It's too controversial. It's too negative. They'll never get along. These groups will never get along. I don't want even part of it. I don't even want to hear about it. And these are the responses you'll get today. When you try to talk to your friends about it, many of you receive these responses. I don't want to hear it. I don't believe it. I don't want to hear it. Or if they do hear it, after you tell them about something, they'll say, well, I don't believe that. That's conspiracy. That's absolute conspiracy. How crazy. That's crazy talk. So many of them will say, I don't even want to hear it. Others, if they'll hear it, then they'll respond, I don't believe it. And then if they let you hear it, many of them will say, well, you know what? Good for you. I don't want to confront it. I'm not interested in confronting that. No good can come from getting involved in that. And this is the way you get people to surrender. I don't want to hear it. I don't believe it. And I don't want to confront it. Either way, the conflict, the contradicting messages have caused them to surrender. The apathy. Well, in the remaining moments, let's look at the battle for the mind, because that's what this all is. It's a battle for the mind. Psychiatrist Dr. William Sargent of the Tavistock Institute explained this process in his 1957 book, Battle for the Mind, when he wrote, quote, various types of belief can be implanted in many people after brain function has been sufficiently disturbed by accidentally or deliberately induced fear, anger, or excitement. Of the results caused by such disturbances, the most common one is temporarily impaired judgment and heightened suggestibility. Notice here, folks, after someone has been sufficiently disturbed by accidentally or deliberately induced fear, anger, or excitement, you can do what? Temporarily impaired judgment and heightened suggestibility. All right. So how can we make people angry? Well, there's a lot of ways you can make people angry. One of the ways you can make people angry, and it makes me angry, and then I have to realize what's going on here, is I will see the video footage of a police officer pulling someone over and then doing something that is in total violation of their oath, of the code of conduct, of everything they have been trained to do, is in direct contrast with the civil liberties of the individual they're now dealing with, and you see them abuse their power. I don't think anything angers more Americans than someone who wields a lot of power with a gun, and the ability to arrest and detain, and then they take that power and authority and they abuse it. And I have watched video footage of police officers do this. And in most of us, their rise is what? A righteous indignation, because we realize they are not honoring their oath, the badge. They're bringing a disgrace onto their profession. And you can get very angry, a righteous indignation, to think that they would do that and treat someone that way. And we see police officers, sadly, one after the other being fired around this country. Police officers, sheriff deputies, because of the video we have available today, them behaving in a way that is absolutely out of line. Some of them are being prosecuted. Now, when they show this on the television, immediately with most people, it induces a fear, it induces anxiety internally, and it induces and or anger, because they realize that could be me, that could be my loved one, that could be my son, my daughter, my neighbor, my friend, whatever. And they don't like it because they realize it's not just, that's not right. That's a scary situation to find oneself in. And it makes me angry to see that someone would have such power and then use it in such an immoral way, right? And what is the goal when they show this over and over and over? Not that the public shouldn't be made aware of these things. They should. Why? So we can go to our elected officials and say, why is it you're hiring such people who are lacking in character? Why are you hiring people who are lacking in character and in good morals? What are you paying these people? Oh, that's what you're paying them? Well, no wonder you're getting those kind of candidates. Where are you spending your money? Oh, AstroTurf for your soccer fields and football fields and $100 million sports stadiums for high school students. Well, no wonder we don't have enough money to pay police officers and sheriff deputies a decent salary so we can attract the best qualified candidate that is full of integrity and character. That's why we should know about these things. So we the people, because the government is what? Individuals coming together collectively to carry out the purpose and function of civil government, reward the righteous and punish the wicked. And if we don't know these things, we don't know who to go and hold accountable. Well, why are we seeing so much bad behavior among police officers and sheriff deputies? Well, maybe partly because of the lack of screening, and maybe because of the lack of training, maybe because of the low salaries. Why the low salaries? Because the politicians are spending money being involved in philanthropy, which is not the purpose of government, or to empower and give gravy to the special interest groups that keep electing them. Whatever the reason, those funds are going somewhere, and they're not going to the first function and purpose of government: reward the righteous, punish the wicked, keep a stable and just society. So I'm glad these things are out there so that we can hold our elected officials accountable. But the media never frames it this way. What they do is they take these incidences, which are becoming all too common, and then they say, this is what a racist nation America is. This is because there is institutional racism in America. We are all drowning in racism. We are immersed in racism. We don't even realize how racist we are. Much of it is because of our white privilege, right? And so what they do is they use that kind of situation on the news and they show these videos over and over. But instead of walking through it with common sense and context and getting to the root cause of how you have someone act that way, how that guy even became an officer of the law, like I've done, they don't do that. They immediately use it to then switch to some community organizer who's being interviewed, who now wants to tell you how we need community policing and we need community organizations that oversee the police departments. Well, what they maybe aren't telling you is those community organizations, many of them, are communist organizations. And now we have laws in New York where these people are committing violent crimes. And now as of 2020, what happens? There's no bail. They just get out. Did you hear the story last week about the guy that robbed all these banks? They let him out. The guy that assaults somebody right on video? They let him out. people committing horrible crimes. But because we've allowed community organizers, communists, to break down the rule of law, the purpose of the law, respect for the rule of law, and because we let the communists and the cultural Marxists spend our limited resources on social engineering so that you end up with bad candidates who then do bad things that they can then film and then use that to do what? Incite anger in the public. And now we can supplant something in their mind, because now, because of the anger, because of the disturbance we have interjected into their mind, they're not thinking reasonably. Now that we've got them angry and we've given them information that's not in context, we now have made them fearful or angry. And now, what can we do? Look at the slide. Caused by such disturbances, the most common one is temporarily impaired judgment and heightened suggestibility. So now we can suggest, why has this problem occurred? Institutional racism, capitalism. Cops are bad. All cops are bad. Whatever it might be. You see? But what did Dr. William Sargent say of the Tavistock Institute? Various types of belief can be implanted in many people after brain function has been sufficiently disturbed by accidentally or deliberately induced fear, anger, or incitement. So, you know what they're doing? They're deliberately creating anxiety, fear, anger. Then, now that they have you angry with fake news, angry with fake history, angry with all kinds of propaganda, now they can use that anger because they've got you emotionally involved, and they manipulate your emotion to now implant something because of your heightened suggestibility. Now we're going to tell you what the solution is to said problem. Wait a minute. You haven't even defined the problem correctly, the root of the problem, or you've completely lied. Whatever it is, how many stories have you seen where it's presented and you think, wow, that guy, throw the book at him. You know, he deserves whatever he gets. And then at the end of the story, they tell you the guy was completely innocent. And you go, wow, that's why you got to listen to both sides and hear all the information, right? Well, the media doesn't do that most times today anymore, do they? Because they're using this psychological process of inducing fear and anger so now they can make heightened suggestibility as to why you should follow their ideas, their propaganda. And this is how you carry out a psychological process. Using that same understanding from how men operated during time of war. Their fear, their anxiety, they could be easily brainwashed. Heightened suggestibility. Well, now let's take that and let's set up scenarios in culture with competing information, contradicting internal and external values, contradictory information and propaganda, stories out of context, no context, reason, and logic being used, get people emotionally involved, angry, pitting people against each other. Now people are open to the suggestion, i.e. the solution, i.e. cultural Marxism, more government. It's a psychological process the whole way. And so next week, we'll pick it up right here as we continue looking at information warfare in American Christians, and particularly the issue of psychological warfare. Boy, doesn't our time go fast? I wish I could keep going because I have a lot more I've already planned for tonight, but we must stop here. Now, again, I've already made the case for why you need to support us, I think, by all the information I've presented. Doesn't the information I have presented tonight show you that we need to keep doing this? Again, don't forget, every month, $3,000 a month we pay in streaming and storage so you can watch these programs. Streaming and storage, just $3,000 alone, not to mention all of our other costs. Not to mention, here we are in January of 2020, and we're going to be bringing in Usama Dakdok, Andy Woods, Tommy Ice, several other people are coming in, I'll be announcing soon, to film TV here. We pay for their airfare, we pay for their hotel, we film their shows, we send them back home, we post-produce these shows, put them out to you, we don't charge them a dime. You're saying, well, I bet you they charge all those people. I bet those shows are all paid for by the people whose shows he produces. No. Call up or email any of them. They'll tell you, we don't charge them a dime. Many of them wouldn't be able to do the show. They don't have the budgets to pay us to produce their shows. We produce their shows for them. We fly them in. We put them up in hotels. We produce their shows. We post edit their shows, and we put them out and promote them and their cause and their great teaching to you. And how do we do it? As I've already said tonight, two ways. Either tax-deductible contribution at wvwfoundation.com or your membership at SituationRoom.net. So please let us hear from you, SituationRoom.net. Well, next week, we'll pick up part 6 on information warfare in American Christians, and particularly the battle for the mind, mental hygiene, cognitive dissonance, and psychological warfare. Thanks so much for watching. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care.